Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, July 7th, 2022, and thanks for listening today. Okay, as you know, Education Talk Radio is part of our American Consortium for Equity in Education, and everything we do is over at ace-ed.org, and we do a lot. Okay, we have our magazine, which is called Equity in Access Pre-K-12. All of our podcasts are over there at ace-ed.org, over 4,000 of them. Can you believe it? All right. We have our teacher-retention.com website, teacher-retention.com, all about the educator shortage and some wonderful professional development we offer. That's worth going over and checking out. Our Excellence in Equity Awards. Okay, please nominate yourself, nominate a colleague, nominate a company, whatever you want to do. There's an icon over there for awards. And also we have SEL Today, our Resource Center for Social Emotional Learning for both educators and students. So we do a lot. Also, they're linked over at ace-ed.org. Today we're going to talk about something very important with Dr. April Willis, who is a wonderful lady. I'm bringing her on right now. And she is also the Director of Business Operations for the National Virtual Teacher Association. National Virtual Teacher Association at virtualteacherassociation.org. Virtual education is a lot more than just a trend. Okay, it's here and it's important. Okay, we're going to, and April will give us a skinny right here. So, good morning, my friend April Willis. How are you today down in Texas?
Oh, good morning. I'm so good. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
You're always welcome here, April. I want you to know that. You are always welcome here. And April's really something. I just want to, can I brag a little bit here for you? Okay, so you can blush. Okay. April has a doctorate and three master's degrees. She's published two books on achieving academic and professional excellence. She's founded a scholarship and has spent her entire career in education. And she's worked at the campus, district, and state levels and holds certifications up to and including the superintendency, principalship, and 8 teaching roles. The woman never stops. Okay? And you don't. You're amazing. Okay? And now, director, one of the things you do, Director of Business Operations for the National Virtual Teacher Association. And this is important stuff. Trends. Okay? So let's talk about this and let's put it in perspective, April. Okay? We did virtual education, virtual instruction, I'll call it that. Don't know how much education. Okay. And by the way, I'm in favor of virtual education. I want to make that point right off the bat. Okay. I think it's important and it works in the right places. But how effective was it in K-12 in the last few years? Okay, just talk about that. How effective?
Sure.
April, the amazing doctor. Go for it.
Thank you. We know, and we've seen it on the news. We've heard it from our neighbors, probably have your own children who have gone through it at some point. It was completely ineffective. So we had 93% of students in the United States utilizing some form of virtual learning during the pandemic. 93% of our students were in there. We had 1.2 billion children in 186 countries accessing virtual learning during the pandemic. This was something that almost every single student across the globe was a part of. Wow. And what we know from it is it was very ineffective, unfortunately. So, for example, when we start to look at learning loss, strictly academic learning loss, we know that by the time they finish the 2020 to 2021 school year, on average, students were 5 months behind. And, of course, it was the students who were hit the hardest were the ones who, in math and reading, identified as low income or students of color. We still did see our white students averaging 4 months behind, but our students of color, our black and Hispanic students, were 5 and 6 months behind in math and reading by the end of the school year. It doesn't stop there either. It's not just about their academic learning loss that we saw, but we also saw chronic absenteeism for 8th through 12th graders increased by 12%.
Right.
We had 42% of students who were new to chronic absenteeism, and they weren't attending school at all. We also had up to 4.6 million additional 8th through 12th grade students chronically absent from school, and it was clearly ineffective from an academic perspective, from an attendance perspective, but we can also talk about mental health. We know that as a result of virtual instruction being the answer to education during the pandemic, we had an increase of students experiencing anxiety, depression, social withdrawal, self-isolation, and irrational fears, all skyrocketing during the pandemic. So it was not effective.
But April, you're the Director of Business Operations for the National Virtual Teacher Association, okay? And you note the word, and we both use this, virtual instruction versus virtual education, because kids did have some problems learning, which is the essence of education, all right? And teachers had some problems teaching again, okay, which is the essence. So it was so ineffective. Why are you the director of, why don't you get a new job? Should we even go forward? And actually, I know that's a silly question because I know where you're leading this, but please go ahead. Why should we continue to explore virtual? We got to change virtual instruction to virtual education. It's the kids that matter, not the teachers. Okay, we got to make sure the teachers are doing a good job. So if it was a failure, why are we still pursuing this? And I know the answer, but I'm going to let you answer that.
Sure. So it was a failure because we threw ill-equipped and underprepared teachers into this virtual environment with little to no training and by no choice of their own. We were expecting them to build this plane while they were flying it, and they had no support to do so. And so when you think of any other profession, you would never turn them upside down on their heads like that and hold them accountable for the performance of the people they are working with, in our world, students, who also didn't have the support that they needed at home, oftentimes missing hardware, not having access to the internet, not having access to school books, workbooks, or any other resources, having to share devices. Maybe you have one cell phone for a sibling group of three. Maybe there were family members who were able to stay home with them, but they don't know how to support that learning environment the same way they would have received in school. So yes, it was ineffective because nobody was prepared for it. However, we know that virtual education in and of itself is incredibly effective. In fact, if we want to look at the history of virtual education, we know that it literally started in the 1700s with correspondence learning. People would write into South Africa, where we had our first correspondence learning college.
Really?
They would
really?
Ask, they would ask for their assignments. It would get mailed back to them. They would do their assignment, mail it in. They would get a grade with their next assignment. Correspondence education has been happening since the 1700s.
I didn't know that. I do correspondence education, but not, wow.
Right, and so we look more recently, though. The University of Phoenix, we can all remember, 1989 is when they originally kicked off, but it started gaining in the 90s, where people were talking about, I can get my bachelor's degree through an online university. And at first, what were people doing? Rolling their eyes about it. They were like, that'll never stick. How do we know that that's a legitimate degree? How do they know the person who they're giving the degree to is the same person whose name is on that paper? So there were a lot of questions about it. But it actually turned out to be very effective because we were meeting the needs of our learners. We knew that the adult learner was working full-time jobs, raising families, trying to manage their personal life, but they also wanted to pursue professional growth. And so this became the answer to it. And it became so successful, they've expanded it. Now you can get master's degrees in the 90s online. Currently, we're talking about today, how many people do we know who did get a doctoral degree online?
This is
something that we talk about preparing our students for the future. It starts in kindergarten. We are preparing them for a world of access to things online. They are going to be getting jobs online, completing the entire application process using the internet. They're going to be pursuing continual growth and development opportunities online. You know, a lot of them are probably going to start dating online at some point. Everything is happening online. That is where our world is headed. And so for us in education to say, that's fine, the entire rest of the world can be online, but we only do in person, we are not preparing our students for success after graduation.
You got that right. You know, it's interesting. Yeah. We always say we want future-ready kids. We want future-ready kids. But we got to have future-ready teachers, too. Okay? We got to prepare teachers for the future. And here's the big news. The future's now, just in case everybody missed that. The future's right now. Okay? What was the future is now the past in that 1 second. Okay? And we've already we're 1 second behind. And we've got to get teachers and educators and school boards, if I may interrupt here, and of course I'm doing that anyway, April, okay? You know, we've got to get them to understand, okay, that this is not some fad. I can keep going back to it. It's not some trend. It's not some pandemic thing we tried and didn't work. Okay, there's a million reasons that that we need, A, to think about it more clearly, and B, to train people to do it properly. Okay. April, you're back on. Go ahead. Your thoughts.
Yeah, well, you know, you're absolutely right. And it's not also that this is just your belief and my belief and we're like, hey, guys, listen up. We actually have support from the federal administration. In fact, back in 2009, they pledged $500 million for the creation of new online courses and materials. We also have quotes from the federal administration. They actually said that, you know, fewer than 5% of the nation's teacher training programs offer field experience in online learning environments. But the U.S. Department of Ed has encouraged teacher prep programs to infuse an emphasis on active technology use across their curricula, but there's been little indication to date of systemic change. We have support from our Department of Education at the federal level that this is the direction we're headed, and we need the school districts to start adapting.
Yeah, and let me ask you this. Obviously, the pandemic, we went virtual, and everybody knows that was tough. Okay, there's no doubt about that. And teachers were floundering, not that they weren't trying. I want to make sure people understand that. They were trying very, very hard. And they did a pretty good job with what they knew. Okay? But you can't make a ocean liner out of a rowboat. Okay?
Yeah.
You can get to where you're going, but it's going to take you a lot longer. Okay? So my question is, since the pandemic, okay, and since we know more kids are staying home, since we know there's a teacher shortage, and we can't get that, I'll use my state, we can't get that great physics teacher to upstate Maine, okay? You know, I mean, it goes on, and we can't find a substitute, okay, to handle the class because two of our teachers have COVID, okay?
Right.
The list goes on and on and on. This has to be handled like my shopping was today on Amazon, virtually.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
that's right.
Have I stolen all your points? But please go ahead and just talk about all this. What are you hearing from the states, okay, or from the districts? Mm-hmm. I mean, your statistics are wonderful, and the feds, they're always an hour and a half behind, but at least they're trying here, okay?
Exactly.
What's going on?
So
what do you hear from states?
And by the way,
I want you to feel free. Okay, you got good buddies at Proximity Learning. Does this? They're good friends of ours. Okay, and they supply. I want to mention them for this. All, you know, just talk about all this. Put it all into perspective. What are you hearing from the states?
Absolutely. So from the states, we know that there is definitely a spectrum of acceptance of virtual education. There are some states who are still putting their foot down and saying, we are not going to offer this, one, because we're not going to pay for it. So if you guys want to offer it, your district has to come up with a way to pay for it on its own. There are other states who have fully adopted it, and in fact, since COVID, have launched their own virtual schools to show people how much they've embraced this. So virtual schools are starting to become a thing you're going to hear more and more about. You would not have heard the term Yeah, virtual school. Go back 3 years ago, nobody knew what that was at a district level. You might have heard private companies offering virtual schools, but nobody had within their school district a virtual school option. And now we do. Now we are starting to hear this as another one of those trends where virtual schools are popping up more regularly. And so one of the things that we talk about is this is great that you have staff who are embracing it, you have school board administrators embracing it, families are asking for this. This is no longer something where it's just about our capacity. In fact, if anything, your capacity is going to increase by offering this for all of the reasons you were just saying. How many teachers out there are like, I'm not putting my family in danger. I'm not going back to work in an environment where I could still come back with something. We know COVID hasn't gone away. In fact, we're in the middle of another surge right now. And thankfully, it's during the summer break, so teachers aren't having to set their families to that. But when it comes back to the school year, that's something they have to think about. We know a lot of teachers have young children of their own at home that they're not trying to get sick. And immunocompromisation has been something that isn't new to COVID. That has always been in existence. The fact that right now there's more conversation around those who are immunocompromised has brought to light that teachers deserve some options as well. They shouldn't have to feel like they're putting so much on the line by going in. So if we can certify them so that they can be virtual educators and still do an incredible job at home, that's the direction we should be heading in.
You know, you're right, and actually I wrote this down as my next question. April, as I mentioned before, is the Director of Business Operations at the National Virtual Teacher Association. Okay, Virtual Teacher Association at singular, virtualteacherassociation.org, all right? But talk about the association itself. We're talking to a lot of educators here. They can go over there and look. What does the association do? Okay, Almighty April.
Yeah.
What does the association do? Yeah.
Of course. So the Virtual Teacher Association exists so that we can help educators best understand how to take the learning that they were used to in a traditional brick-and-mortar classroom and translate it to a virtual environment. It is not as simple as I'm doing the exact same thing but now in front of a computer. There are best practices and high-yield strategies that we share with them. So we have lots of resources. We have a free
I want to stop you. You know, it's easy to say that, and I know you have the answer to this one. Give an example of a best practice. I can give one, okay? And I'll give you one in a second. That matters to virtual that people may not have thought of. And one of the ones that I like that I heard over the pandemic is that, you know, people set their camera up, sit in front of the computer, and talk. Okay, but if you think about the way a movie or a TV show is done on screen, okay, they use different angles. They use different cuts. They have close-ups. They have far shots. They have to the left, to the right, etc. Okay, and just looking at one person standing there or sitting there for 2 hours is not good. And one of the shows I did over the pandemic was the guy said, for God's sakes, change the angle and move around a little bit. Okay, and let people know, you know, that you're movable, because that's the way the mind works. Otherwise, it gets too bored. So that's my little best practice. Give me another one. Give me one more.
I love that. Sure.
Yeah.
So also, just to kind of piggyback off of yours, hopefully nobody is providing a two-hour lecture. That is not best practice at all. We would want to see you break that up just like you would, similarly, in brick and mortar. We want to do maybe 7 minutes of an intro. Then we're going to use breakout rooms. We're going to come back and allow students to share out. We're going to have a whole group activity, maybe a song, a dance, a cheer, something to get them moving and stretching. And then we're going to come back and offer them some independent work time. So there are ways to structure that class so that is highly engaging. But I would say my favorite best practice strategy that I like to encourage teachers to use is the weight room. So this is my version of, in brick and mortar, do you remember how you would stand outside of your classroom and greet every single student on their way in? So you can gauge where they're at for that day, ask them how their day is going, see if anybody is going through a problem or concern or obstacle that might be a challenge for you in behavior management. You can figure out if anybody is celebrating anything. It makes them feel special. It makes them feel seen. You can do the exact same thing by implementing breakout rooms in your virtual class. I'm sorry, not breakout rooms, with waiting room in your virtual classroom.
Yeah.
So you allow one student in at a time, and when you do, you talk to them. How's your day? You feeling okay? Are you pumped about this thing we're about to learn? I'm so excited you're here. I'm going to give you a special responsibility today. Can you take notes on da-da-da? And so you make them feel seen and respected and heard, and that is your best way to continue to not only have a good day in class that day, but it's also going to encourage their attendance in your class for the rest of the semester, because you're the class we look forward to because they've built a relationship with you.
It's important stuff is all I can tell you. Okay. And just again, virtualteacherassociation.org. Okay. So let me ask you this, and this is a key question. You know, I have often said, you know, if the kids aren't learning, you're not teaching. Okay. And I always said we should change the name of the profession from teacher to learning facilitator. Okay. Or learning director, because it ain't about us teaching. It's about them learning. All right, we got the profession ass backwards here. All right, so I'm curious, all right, if we continue to pursue the virtual ed options, okay, who's going to best benefit from this? And it might be both teachers and students, but I'm curious. People have to really put some effort into this, just like we do for in-person teaching, okay? Who wins?
Yeah. So it's not even just teacher or student. It actually is school district also. So we'll start there.
Cool.
So our school districts need to know that right now we have higher numbers of students pulling out or withdrawing from their schools, which everybody has seen enrollments on a decline for our public school districts across the country. We also know our charter school districts continue to see wait lists. So imagine if both of those districts, your traditional ISD and your public charter school in your neighborhood, if you might have access to, if they all started offering virtual education options, we would see the traditional ISD retain some of the students who have been withdrawing. We would also see the charter school districts no longer have to have a wait list because they had capacity to serve all their students. We would see that both the school districts, whether you're charter or traditional, are going to see increase in enrollments because you are meeting the needs of more learners. So let's talk about who these learners are and why we're meeting their particular needs, or your question, who's benefiting from it. Well, students are benefiting from it, similar to the example that you were giving earlier. Let's say I want to teach Mandarin Chinese in rural Oklahoma, but nobody within my geographic zip code is certified to teach that. Well, are those students enrolling in college on the same playing field as people who had access to that teacher? They're not. And so how do we level that playing field? We allow students to have access to the same courses across the board. And the only way we can do that is by live streaming virtual educators to every single student across this country.
Here.
There is no more. Yeah, we can't. Sorry, Susie. Statistics
exactly right.
Is booked. There's no room for you. You cannot take AP statistics this semester. Well, now you can. There are no more full courses. There are no more. We don't have people certified to teach this. All of those excuses get obliterated when you have the option of live streaming virtual educators. And I do want to emphasize live streaming. We are not at all advocating for hybrid models or asynchronous learning. We do not want to put students in front of a computer, have them push play, and listen to lectures module after module. That is not how P12 learners learn best. We understand there are exceptions, and there are times where that has to be done, maybe for course remediation, if you're a senior and you just have to graduate. That is not best practice across the board, though. Adult learners have much higher potential of taking away learning from an environment like that, but our P12 learners need the relationship building. They need the highly engaging classroom lessons, and so we want to live stream instructors. The other part of that, so when you talk about who else is benefiting, and we continue to talk about students not only having equal access to courses across the board, but we go back to talking about those students who Maybe they are immunocompromised and it's not because of COVID.
Right.
We have a lot of other reasons why students can't go physically to the schools that they should be going to based on what everybody else is offering. This is providing options for families. So whether it is a medical concern or even if it's transportation, those rural schools can be very far away from each other. If you're also trying to work a full-time job and drop kiddos off, and that used to be a very complicated scheduling system families had to work out, how much easier is it now if they also have the option to just learn from home? And those students who have family obligations, maybe they are almost a primary caretaker for their younger siblings. Maybe they are working multiple jobs. Maybe they're parents themselves. We are making it so that there are no longer excuses for not attending school. We are meeting them where they're at. We also recognize this is not the answer for every single student. And I am a firm believer of school choice, and I do believe that every child should have an opportunity to find a customized educational package that works for them, because it is our obligation here as educators to make sure that every single student is learning to the best of their capacity and the way that makes sense for them. We should not be asking students to adapt to our old school ways of you go to school from 7 a.m. to 3:15 p.m. in rows. We are now bringing education to you. Now, there are some students who do learn best in that traditional model. I was one of them. I absolutely thrived in the public schools. I loved the way that the scheduling was. I loved my teachers. I loved the environment. Everything was perfect. There are other students who are dealing with social anxieties, who are dealing with bullying, who are dealing with things where they feel like they are falling between the cracks and nobody sees or hears them. And we need options for those students as well. So by doing this, the students are benefiting from a myriad of reasons, and those are just some of them. Now, finally, if we talk about how those teachers are benefiting, well, teachers are humans too, and they have families, and they have these kids that we're talking about. And we want to give them the opportunity to feel like I can still pursue my profession while I am still raising a family. I can pursue a profession without putting myself and my family at risk. I can pursue a profession where I feel like I'm making a greater impact by reaching more students who might need me more than the district I live and work in. So this is really a win-win. We've also know that as virtual educators, they have the opportunity for more flexible scheduling. So now we have teachers who can say, I only want to live stream classes from 8 a.m. to noon. That's an option, because when you're live streaming, you're no longer bound to your time zone. You can say, I want to wake up really early before my kids have to go to school. I'm going to teach on the other side of the country. I'll get all my work done. Then I can spend the rest of the day with them. I can help them with their virtual instruction if I want. We also have teachers who maybe they're married to military. Maybe they enjoy traveling. The beauty of virtual education is you need less sick days because you have the opportunity to go on vacation. You can teach from Germany to your students in Houston, Texas. There is no reason at that point. We are eliminating all of the obstacles that previously were bound by in-person instruction. And so at this point, when we're like, wow, all of this sounds incredible, what's holding us back? What's holding us back are the preconceived notions we made out of the results that we saw from COVID. Unfortunately, people are saying, well, clearly virtual instruction doesn't work. Well, no, that's not true. It does work. We just didn't do it under the right circumstances. So if we can break people of this notion that it's clearly ineffective and forever will be, we all of a sudden open the door to all of these possibilities that are best serving our communities, our children, and our teachers.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I have to say this, it's practical, and I'm going to keep this simple. Thank you, April. That was a great review of everything. I really mean that. But I got to tell you, education is changing. K-12 education is changing. It's slow to change, and it's not going to change 100%, but things change, all right? Mm-hmm. And it pays, I don't mean this both colloquially and literally, it pays for a teacher to have another thing that they can use, okay? Another magic trick in the old box, so to speak. To have a certification, all right, in virtual teaching opens up a whole new playing field, okay?
Right.
And you can stay with the old playing field. That's fine, okay? But the world's changing, and your district may need you to do virtual, okay?
That's right.
And boom, suddenly you can do it. Okay, or you may be able to take your expertise and after school is done in Texas, teach the kids in California who do need that Mandarin course. Okay, mm-hmm. It's that simple. Okay, it's great. So please, everybody, we got to go, but please, everybody, please check this out. It's for your own benefit and for the benefit of the kids. Okay, it works. I'm a big fan of it. VirtualTeacherAssociation.org, and that, you just heard that wonderful voice. She'll be back on in the fall, believe me, is Dr. April Willis, okay, who is pretty darn good, I got to tell you. Well explained, April. Good job. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on today. It's always a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure here. You're always welcome here. Thanks, pal. Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye-bye. April Willis, everybody, virtualteacherassociation.org. That's for everybody's benefit. Okay, we're going to archive at ace-ed.org. We do a lot over there. Check it out.